Welcome, Nathan, and welcome to our listeners to Water Cooler Christianity, the podcast where we talk about pop culture and the life of faith. My name is Aaron Hayworth. I'm one of your co-hosts.
And I am Laura Whitman, the other one of your co-hosts. And today we have with us a special guest, someone I've personally had a crush on for over 10 years now. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Nathan. I'm a pastor at St. James United Methodist Church. I also have a crush on myself. I'm just joking. I have a crush on Laura Whitman because I'm her husband, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are glad to have you with us today, Nathan. As we get started here on Water Cooler Christianity for today's episode, we have a couple of icebreaker questions we'd like to ask you. Are you ready?
I think so.
All right. Number one, describe your walk with Christ in two words.
I'm Batman.
Interesting. Interesting move.
So let's unpack that. No. You know, maybe it's because I'm reading Matt Rawls' The Gift of the Nutcracker right now with my church, but the two words that he's used in our study that I think probably describe my walk is suspenseful and surprising.
Okay.
I think those would be the two words.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Now my favorite question, which is, who is your favorite sinner?
Oh, my favorite sinner. You know, I listened to the first episode of this podcast, and I feel like I should say Laura.
you could, but you don't have to.
Well, I mean, I feel like I have to. Like, when you unpack that question, it's like asking, we're all sinners, right? So, you know, if you have a favorite sinner, who's the favorite person that just happens to be a sinner?
I feel like that's a backhanded compliment, but thank you.
I'm going to do that. Brownie point answer. And
all right, we'll accept that begrudgingly.
And Nathan, you're at the movie theater. You can have one piece of candy, and not popcorn, but one piece of candy. What do you choose?
You know, I'm pretty sure you could answer this one, Laura.
Hot tamales.
It's hot tamales. It would have to be hot tamales.
It.
They taste so good, and the only problem is, like, your mouth, like, you don't have a sense of taste after the movie, you eat the whole box. So it just kind of burns your tongue. But I do like hot tamales.
Well, Nathan is with us today as our resident Superman expert, which we're pretty excited about. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about Superman, what he means for us as people of faith, and what we can learn from the story of Superman. So, Nathan, tell us what is it that's so appealing to you about Superman? Why is he one of your favorite heroes?
That's a really good question. The first thing I'll say is I feel like my favorite superhero has changed throughout my life, depending on what stage of my life I'm in, but also just depending on what's been popular at the time, because we live in a time when superheroes are literally everywhere. And there's something superhero-like coming out, like, you know, every 3 months. But, you know, when I grew up, you know, back in my day, we just had, you know, literally one of the first movies we ever watched was Superman the movie that came out in 1978. And my parents had it recorded on a VHS. And it was that movie, Ghostbusters, and Empire Strikes Back that were, like, the only movies I kind of had. And so one of the reasons Superman is one of my favorite superheroes is just because when I was a kid, that's the movie I watched. Like constantly. I know we'll go into a little more detail as the show goes on in this, but as I started to see kind of some deeper, like almost theological meaning behind the character of Superman, he's really appealed to me a whole lot. He's a person of great hope and inspiration for his people. He's not known for his violence so much, or even though he has these superpowers, it's not so much that those superpowers he's known for. He's known for a person that deeply cares for humanity and seeks to be a savior amongst them and tries to inspire good in other people. And that's just something that's pretty uniquely Superman and one of the reasons he's one of my favorite heroes.
Yeah, it's kind of hard not to read a little bit of faith into Superman, a little bit of of the Christian story into him. He kind of just stands for everything good. I just watched the 1978 Superman movie, and some of the parts are just flagrant. Like I think to myself, as who is it? Jor-El, Superman's father, as he's like backing his son up, getting ready to send him to Earth. He's talking about his only son and how he's going to be a symbol of hope to these people of Earth and an inspiration to them. And I'm just like, oh, man, they're really laying it on thick here.
And so in a lot of ways, because of that imagery, there's a sense in which there's a sense in which Superman almost becomes like a Moses character. Don't you think?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. The thing about the Superman character, just a real brief history. Way before the 1978 movie, he was created by Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, who were actually sons of Jewish immigrants. And they, when they were creating the character Superman, in the beginning he was supposed to be kind of like a hero, a Jewish hero in a sense. And like you said, yes, based on Moses. And one of the easiest ways to see that is just in the story of being this son of an endangered people that's placed in this spacecraft, we'll call it a basket, and carried, you know, through this treacherous journey and then picked up by another people and trained in their ways. And yet he was, you know, not one of them. And so very much there is that kind of story of Moses there, being a Hebrew person raised by Egyptians, and, you know, that treacherous journey on the Nile and the basket and whatnot. And even the names, you know, Superman, his real name is Kal-El, and his father's name, as you said, was Jor-El, from the house of El. And El, of course, comes from Elohim and God. And there's all these little subtle connections that were put in to this character that he really was supposed to kind of initially be this Moses character that brought the law, truth, justice, and the American way to the people. So
one of the things that Aaron mentioned too is that Superman is a, you know, he talks about him being a symbol of hope. And in the most recent movie, the Justice League, at the beginning with Henry Cavill, he talks about the symbol on his chest. And, you know, they ask him, you know, we'll talk about the S, and he says, oh, it's not an S. It's not an S. It's more like a river, right? Like a symbol of hope. So can you talk about that a little bit? What Superman's symbol really means, as a symbol of hope for the people?
And again, just the brief disclaimer, this is kind of the interpretation of Man of Steel and the Justice League, so the most recent Superman movies. Because, you know, it does very much look like an S, and I don't think they went into much detail on that in the Superman the movie back in the day. But it's his family crest, and the way they explain it is that this symbol stands for hope. And I think I got a quote here from actually Man of Steel. The people of Earth are different from us, it's true, but ultimately I believe that is a good thing. They won't necessarily make the same mistakes we did, but if you guide them, Cal, if you give them hope, that's what the symbol means. The symbol of the House of El means hope. Embodied within the hope is this fundamental belief, the potential of every person to be a force for good, and that's what you can bring them. And then the quote you're thinking of comes from Justice League when it's like right at the beginning of the movie when he's being interviewed by these kids. He's describing it and he says, you know, yes, it's meant to look like an S. It's meant to wind just like a river. It comes and goes. A man I used to say that hope was like your car keys. It's easy to lose, but if you dig around, it's usually close by. And that again, that goes into one of the, I think one of the most essential pieces of Superman's character is he's this inherently good person. And in Superman the movie, his father even says that his heart is stronger than the human heart. It, you know, in other words, it loves stronger. It forgives easy. It doesn't hold grudges. It's, you know, you're able to be a better being to inspire them. And the line that he shares with Kal-El, his son, in the 78 movie, that's just one of my all-time favorite, and the one that kind of solidifies that Christ-like image, is, "They can be a great people, Kal-El. They only lack the light to show them the way. And it's for this reason, their capacity for good, that I sent them you, my only son." So, and again, like was said earlier, it's hard not to hear that and immediately think of Jesus and that story of Jesus, which is a much more important story than Superman, but reflected in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I like the idea that Superman has always had this potential and this inherent goodness with him. But what do you think about Superman's goodness with regards to his adoptive family, the Kents? And I mean, there's biblical resonances even just with the name Martha.
Martha.
I'm waiting for that. Martha. Again, even though this was originally created as a Jewish hero, it's so easy to see these similarities with Jesus, because Smallville, the name Smallville, it invokes this, you know, in the country town that doesn't mean anything, you know, it's out of nowhere, out in the middle of nowhere, and very much like a Bethlehem. And he's got two parents that are just, you know, poor farmers, very much like a Joseph and Mary kind of character. But I think there's a sense in which, mixed in with his kind of, you know, strong heart and the values of his Kryptonian heritage, he also has these kind of small town, come from nothing, learn to appreciate everything kind of, way that he was raised by his earthly parents that really shaped who he was.
Yeah, sends half his paycheck back to his mother from the Daily Planet.
Yeah, and yeah, that's one of my favorite lines. And then Lois says, you know, let me guess, white-haired mother or something like that. And he goes, no, silver-haired, actually. Yeah. And then, you know, to kind of veer off the beaten path, there's something in comics that if you read comics you're familiar with, which is Elseworlds. And there was actually some playing around with Superman being raised in other countries and by different people. And, you know, in some of these Elseworlds comics, he kind of became, you know, the tyrant and whatnot. So in other words, kind of trying to say that being raised by Martha and Jonathan Kent was super important to shaping who he was as this kind of humble, you know, even though he's this great, strong, superhuman being, he was taught from birth this humility that really shaped him to be that hero.
And where he happens to land, you know, affects all of that. There's that sense of, you know, truth, justice, the American way, and this sort of imagery that we used to have back in the day of, you know, this sort of simplicity, working hard, coming from basic means, and then, you know, growing up, he manages to leave the small town he's from to become something successful. Only the whole while, he doesn't need any of that build up to success because he is, you know, he has these superpowers and this amazing ability. But it's funny because even despite his power and his ability, he still lives into that sort of call, you know, as the small town boy.
Well, and living into servanthood in a lot of ways. I mean, he's in Superman 1978, he's the towel boy, you know? He's the person who's like folding the jerseys and
right.
and like getting beat up on by like the classic 50s bully character.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's not the cool kid.
Yeah, and that was, again, that was the shaping of his father, Jonathan, specifically in that movie. He, you know, there's that whole dialogue where Clark Kent's talking about how I could run a touchdown every single time, you know, every single time. And his father, he says, I have no doubt about that. He's like, but you weren't put here on earth to play football.
Yeah.
Right.
You were put here for a reason. I don't know what it is, but you were put here for a reason.
And that, again, you know, that echoes that Christ-likeness once again. You know, we think about this Savior, you know, come to this world. They're expecting this Messiah, this strong person. What they get is a baby, right? And then the only story we have of Jesus as a child in Scripture is him staying at the temple while his parents, you know, have left. They've journeyed on, and then they realize
the fortress of solitude.
Right, right. He's very much at the temple worshiping, kind of like the fortress of solitude. Again, not doing what the other kids his age would have been doing. You know, he stays behind. They think he's in trouble, but he's at the temple. He's at, you know, what do you expect? I'm here praying.
At my father's house.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So tell us, speaking of, you know, we know that there's the sort of hard to miss Christ-likeness of Superman, but what about Superman's religion, you know, throughout the Superman narrative? Where does Superman believe in a higher power? Is he, you know, a religious person?
He does. The thing I like to mention, and it might get a few giggles when I say it in a Methodist church, but Superman is a Methodist. Jonathan and Martha Kent were Methodist.
First Methodist Smallville.
Yeah, I don't know. But it sounds good. But even in Man of Steel, we have that scene in which he's trying to make the important decision of whether or not he's going to show up for humanity because they're looking for him because the villain Zod has demanded him. And when he has that tough decision to make, where does he go but a church to go talk to his local pastor there, and also to talk about the type of pastoral counseling I've had to do in my short time in ministry, but to have Superman show up at church and say, yeah, the whole world's looking for me. I don't even know what to do. I think there's like a big gulp the preacher does when that happens.
Yeah. And I think that's just such a beautiful story that included in the comic books and included in the Man of Steel movie, that Superman is a person of faith. It's just such a testament to how open we need to be, that we're not the highest power in the universe, that we don't have ultimate control over our destinies, that we don't have ultimate control over the fate of the universe. There's that scene at Jonathan Kent's funeral in Superman 1978, where he's standing beside his mother and he says, even with all of these powers that I have, I couldn't save him. It's Superman acknowledging, I don't have power over life and death. And in the same scene kind of recurs, spoiler alert, when in the end Lois dies and he has to turn the earth back in time in order to save her. He says, with all of these powers, I couldn't save her. He has to kind of acknowledge he doesn't have mastery over life and death.
Well, and there's a certain way that harkens even to, you know, the story of Lazarus in the Bible, you know. They keep begging for Jesus to come, you know, because he does. He has this ability to heal and to offer hope. And yet Jesus arrives late.
And he still weeps.
Right. He weeps. He mourns. Even though, you know, God's timing is different and it's unfathomable in a lot of ways. And that's what leads our curiosity to understanding God in some ways. But, you know, there's this helplessness for Jesus in his life in a lot of ways because he does have to live into that humanity the same way that we see Superman doing that. Even though he's got this amazing strength and power, he still can't stop life from being life, you know?
And I mean, even Jesus submits to the Father in scripture and, you know, in Philippians, even though he had all of these, you know, gifts and powers, that he didn't lord it over anyone, but lived as a servant. And so I think we see that a little bit in the comics and in the movies with Superman too. But what really inherently makes him good is this humility and this, as you said, submit to a higher power and realize that there's some things beyond his control.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit too about the people who have played Superman. There's been quite a few over the years. You know that my favorite is Henry Cavill, second love of my life after my husband, of course. But who is your favorite Superman?
You know, there's a lot of Supermen to choose from. I'm going to have to say Christopher Reeve. And the reason why is almost like, you know, when you try to say who's the best James Bond. Well, it was, you know, it was Sean Connery because he kind of started it. But in many ways, Christopher Reeve really was like the first huge Superman. There was George Reeves back in the day, but it was a little before my time. But when you saw Christopher Reeve put on that suit and start flying in the movie, it was like, that's Superman right there. So
how do you feel that Christopher Reeve really in his life maybe embodied Superman outside of the Superman movies? Because he, you know, Christopher Reeve was an amazing person who endured a whole lot in his life as well. But how does Christopher Reeve embody Superman?
Well, you know, he had that tragic accident, horse riding accident that left him paralyzed from the neck down. And it was, you know, such a tough image to see because of the fact that he had played Superman for so long. He was in four movies as Superman. And to see this person that was strong and mighty and able to save was all of a sudden unable to move on his own, and bound to a wheelchair. And there are many ways in which he could have just, you know, wouldn't fault him if that broken him, you know, spiritually and emotionally to the point where that might have been the end of his story. But instead, he continued to fight with his influence, with the money he amassed, and the giving of charities to kind of fund ways to help others that might be in his condition. And so through that, you know, he became in a unique way Superman after this happened in real life for people through that influence and through that investment. So it's good sometimes to see when your heroes in real life can, heroes in the movie can in real life kind of embody those traits, but he really did. And nobody would have blamed him if he didn't, but he didn't let that incident be the end of the story, and he turned it into just a great story of hope for others.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I had a question I wanted to ask about Superman and, I guess, well, the Superman universe, which is, we have all of these lessons that we can learn from Superman. Is there anything that we can learn from Superman villains? I think Superman often gets accused of being one of the more black and white kind of superhero situations where Superman is infallibly good and all the bad guys are kind of like laughably simple. So what kind of nuance or lessons do you think we can take from Superman villains?
I feel like I'm going to cheat just a little bit. But I actually did a sermon in which I talked about villains specifically with the character of Spider-Man. So, and one of the things that, and I'll tie this back to Superman, but one of the things that I noticed is that especially if you look at some of the movies of Spider-Man and stuff, like the first one, like there was this Green Goblin and, or actually Norman Osborn and Peter Parker both got their powers at the same time. They both got powers. But what ultimately made Peter Parker a hero was the words of his Uncle Ben that said, with great power comes great responsibility. And so he had to learn that lesson in a harsh way in the losing of his Uncle Ben, but he learned that lesson, and what made him a hero was not the strength or the power or these great abilities. What made him a hero was that he did not use it for himself. And then villains like Green Goblin are motivated by revenge and other things, personal things, gathering of wealth or whatnot, and that's what makes him the villain. And Lex Luthor is like the most popular villain of all time for Superman, and it's interesting that they set themselves up to where Superman is just this amazingly strong brute force, but Lex Luthor likes to show that he is you know, one of the smartest men. He uses his brain, not his brawn. But ultimately what makes Lex Luthor a villain is the fact, the same thing with all the Spider-Man villains, is he exists solely for himself, his wealth, his importance. He wants that power and that fame, and he's, you know, jealous of Superman because Superman has that. And, you know, Lex will tell you, he came from nothing and built his empire, and, you know, Superman just had these gifts, and so he's jealous of it. So whereas Superman is the hero because of his upbringing and his humility and his seeking first and foremost to save others and not himself, he becomes the hero. But somebody like Lex Luthor, because he's ultimately in it for himself, it's that bent that ends up, where Superman is got that ultimate humility, Lex Luthor is just full of himself. And so that makes him the villain. So I think that's a trend you see a lot in many of the comics. What separates a hero from a villain is a hero has sacrifice, a hero shows mercy, a hero seeks the greater good of others over their own well-being, and usually the villains are looking after themselves, and when they get the great power, they use it for themselves. So I don't know if that answers the question.
Don't you think it's a little bit funny, though, that the things that set Lex Luthor apart as a villain are kind of the same things that make Batman a good hero?
Rich. Smart.
But remember, you know, he's rich. He's got all of these things. He's smart. But what's the difference between Batman and Lex Luthor?
Parents.
Batman has a persona of being a rich person. But he ultimately risks himself for other people because when his parents died, he vowed that he was not going to, he would do all that he could to make sure that nobody ever went through that again. And that's the difference between him and Lex Luthor, not the power and the wealth might be there, but it's his ultimate goal, what he's living to do with that. And then Iron Man, I guess, fits into that too somewhere too.
Yeah. So, thing to think about with villains, I guess, or an interesting thing to think about with comic books is, do you think comic books teach us that people are redeemable? This is a really interesting kind of religious question. What do comic books teach us about, like, individual people? Like, are they redeemable, or do they just kind of stay in this intractable position?
I think, especially with modern comics, there's definitely a wrestling with that. And, I mean, look at the story of Batman, Superman, Spider-Man. One of the things that they always have, and we're going to exclude heroes like the Punisher and all this, they're a whole other bag of something, but most of the superheroes have like a no-kill rule. They're not trying to be judge, jury, and executioner. They're ultimately there to protect others from the villains. But if you look at Batman, there's a sense in the comics where, you know, there is some hope for rehabilitation for even, you know, villains like the Joker and whatnot. There's a sense that in sparing them and showing them mercy and not just ending their lives and stuff, that they're laying this hope that there could be something done for them. You know, ultimately, you know, characters like the Joker and all would become a little less interesting if they all of a sudden became really good. But so they continue to be villainous in the comics. But I do think that's there. There was actually a recent comic book with Batman in which he used his detective skills to capture Mr. Freeze. And for the crime that Mr. Freeze was getting ready to commit, he was going to get the death penalty. And Batman basically had some doubts about it because he realized in his own fallibility, he might have got the wrong person. And so he actually found a way to get jury duty. And there's this really interesting comic in which he's literally just kind of wrestling with how Batman is not a god and Batman is fallible. And he does all of this just so he can, in the end, save Mr. Freeze from death row because he didn't think he deserved it. So I think there's some elements of that redeemability in there.
Doesn't it seem like a bit of a conflict of interest that he just found a way to get on jury duty? I have questions about this.
Due process was not handled correctly.
Hi, I would like to serve on this case. Seems like a big red flag.
Yeah. So this kind of question, though, about like guilt and innocence and whether people can change, I guess leads me to this question, which I kind of have about Man of Steel, the most recent Superman movie, which is with how Superman kind of comes to violence at the end of that movie, which is, do you think that that's true to the character?
I you know, this is the biggest hang up I think most people had with that. And I'm of two minds of it. I don't think it fits ultimately with the character of Superman. And the reason why is because Man of Steel was a more brutal movie. And if you really look at the character of Superman, even though he's got strength and all, he's never really about beating up the bad guys. That's not his goal. Usually he's depicted as the one that is more focused on saving others. And, I mean, if you look at Superman the movie, if you look at Superman Returns, there's two movies with Superman in it in which he doesn't throw one single punch. He literally just endures the things that are happening to his city and to others in order to protect them. But in Man of Steel, one of the biggest things that people had problems with is that it got real violent in the sense that things were blowing up. Buildings are falling down. There doesn't seem to be any kind of concern for folks and things like that. And ultimately, there is him killing Zod. And I don't think that fits within that character that ultimately looks for a new and better way. To go back to that question of redeemability, to redeem the villain rather than to just destroy the villain. But at the same time, I think Man of Steel does wrestle with the problem of evil in the world. It wrestles with, you know, what is that other way? Sometimes comics can create these crazy new ways to get out of these situations so that Superman doesn't have to kill. But, like, in real life, it's not that black and white. Yeah, like, literally, in Superman the movie, he flew around backwards.
Which is how time works.
First of all, we know that wouldn't work. To spin the rotation of the Earth in the wrong direction, wouldn't we all just float away or something because gravity would fail or something? Yeah. So, you know, I don't think it fits within his character, but I do think Man of Steel was trying to wrestle with kind of a more serious, like, you know.
Yeah, it's a moral question, a moral conversation that I thought Superman was interesting in dealing with, because it's asking the question, which I don't know that I don't think they get the right answer, which is, can violence be redemptive? And they kind of ended with, I guess it has to be in order to save all these people, but I don't know that hits the spot.
But when we think about how God's justice works, though, sometimes throughout Scripture, the way that God brings justice to his people or to the foreigner or to the oppressed is sometimes in ways that we wouldn't expect God to work. It's not always through peace or through reconciliation. That's a last resort to get to violence or to war or to any of those things. But maybe, perhaps, there are times when that is the only answer. I'm not advocating for violence. I'm just saying, maybe, you know.
Well, I think that's why it's a good question, why it's a good thing that we should have these conversations about the films and TV shows of our culture which deal with violence, which we have to ask the question, like, is it excessive? Can we dismiss it? Do we take it seriously? How is it affecting our general disposition towards other people? I think when you see Superman struggling with that idea, does he want to let other innocent people be hurt by this person? Or does he want to have to commit an act of violence himself? That's a far more nuanced conversation than any war movie has been in quite some time, you know?
Well, and there is that moral struggle there, you know. But there is one thing that ties us all together, and I think it's worth mentioning, and that is Martha. You can be in the midst of the greatest struggle, and once you find out that
what's your mom's name?
Martha. I had no idea that, you know, all joking aside, though, when we find our common denominators, it does pull us to try to understand one another a little bit more, even if it's done in a ridiculous way in Justice League or Batman versus Superman, rather.
Yeah, because Batman is also somebody with that no-kill rule. And, of course, in Batman versus Superman, he's swinging people in cars all around and everything else. And I don't think some people made it through the Batman battles. So that was, and I'm drawing a blank.
Zack Snyder?
Yeah, I don't know why I forgot it.
Yeah, that was not a good direction.
You're kidding.
Like, the movies, like, everybody was, and I know I'm going on a tangent, but everybody was really excited about the way the suits looked, the comic-based, and all of this, and then Batman and Superman had just, you know, taken out people left and right. And you're like, whoa, that's not their characters, that's not who they are. And there's a sense in which, like, even Batman, the Batman character will say that once he gets into that violence, in the sense of taking a life, like, that's the last straw down the rabbit hole to becoming a villain, just like everybody else. Because he's using their means to stop them. He's becoming the villain to stop the villains, which just creates a new villain.
Yeah, and I think we can't forget that these superheroes are supposed to be heroes at least they can be nuanced characters, but at the end of the day, they're supposed to be, they were created to be examples for children and adolescents of how to navigate bullying and violence and even at times of war. I mean, you think of like the origins of some of these comic books, and when you stray too far from those and you just make it just a violent salad of
violent salad with romaine lettuce, which has been recalled by the CDC.
Then you just you lose some of the purity that these comics were created with, which was to teach kids that there is good, mm-hmm. that there is truth, that there is hope,
and that we have a stake in justice too. That it's not just left to the heroes, but much in the same way that we're called to follow Christ, there's an example that is set for us and for these children who read these comic books of what is right and how you can live into that too.
Well, Nathan, do you have any final words for us on Superman?
You know, how much time do you have? any super facts? Anything about Superman? I don't know. I think I've kind of exhausted some of the things that I had to talk today. So I'm at a loss for words for Superman right now, which is not something that usually happens. I do have my Christopher Reeve Superman figure with me as inspiration.
That was my next question, is
are you currently dressed as Superman? All right.
No, not today. I was going to joke and say, you know, you were talking about cosplay in the first episode, and, you know, Laura will tell you that there's one trait that each one of my costumes has, which is I need help. They do not go on by themselves. So Laura's not here. So no, I look like I have glasses on. I'm Clark Kent right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good one. Well, Nathan, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I never thought we could get you on here. I'm just glad that we could pull some strings and get you on the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real dream come true. Just to be able to have the privilege to speak with you today is really just incredible.
So thanks for sharing your wisdom and your insight. And we'll look forward to talking to you sometime in the future.
I'm just thankful that me talking about Superman for however long we've been talking about it counts as wisdom and makes me feel good like I've done something.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners for joining us on Water Cooler Christianity. And we look forward to talking to you soon. Bye.